modified as concerns the entire framework, first of all. As concerns each section, second of all. And as concerns each page, third of all. I'd appreciate very much that help. I'm going to repeat this in Latin America next month and a couple times in Asia in February, and I need all the help I can get. So if you can keep that in mind, that'll be along about, I would suspect, Saturday morning. That may be one of the sessions that you would do that, because by that time we'll have pretty well not only covered the whole framework, but had a chance to reflect on it. Okay, so keep that in your mind, please. And Donald, let's keep that on the project list. I remember what I've assigned them. And don't make it too heavy, but make it what's absolutely necessary. Okay, there is specialization in the body. Each has a gift. And there are gifted persons set aside by God for specialized functions. One of the difficulties with specialists is that they tend to learn perspective. They tend to think that that specialty, as Skip so well pointed out this morning, is more important than some other specialty. Or we lose sight of the relationship or the interdependence. I read about the school teacher who asked her children about the well-known story that three men examined an elephant, and one said that the elephant was like a tree trunk, and the other was that it was like a wall, and the third that it was like a rope. And the teacher said, now what were these men? And of course the obvious answer is blind, but some bright young fellow spoke up and said they were specialists. And there's a good element of truth in that. So specialists have to remember and keep our perspective as to importance and as to interdependence. We naturally dislike limits, just born into us, isn't it? I told some of you when we went over the series on authority and submission and limits that I was sharing them with one young navigator. He said, oh, authority is not the problem. It's when it restricts you from doing something that you want to do that it becomes a problem. Well, I thought how true that is. I received a letter from one of my kids on one of my trips, and she said, Dad, such and such is happening, but there's just one thing. I don't like the rules around this house. That's right. Don't like the rules around this house. But it is true. Take Adam and Eve. There they were in the garden, and they could eat of all the trees of the garden except one. And what seemed to preoccupy the attention? Not what they could do, but that one thing that they could not do. It's kind of like a dog we had. You know, we all have limits. We all have, they say, don't fence me in. Well, it's impossible to live life. There are always limits. There's a fence. And this dog named Taffy, whenever you turned your back, it was always digging out under the fence. And there are people like that, too. We can always be concerned not about the freedoms in here, but the fences here. So, okay, if we'd have made the yard, if we bought out the neighbors and made it fence that big, I know that that dog would have had one thing in mind when your back's turned, to get out under the fence. And if we could have bought up the whole block and made the limits that big, that dog still would have had one thing in mind, how to get out under that fence. So the question is, well, I need more room. I'm fenced in. Well, one good question is, am I enjoying the freedoms in whatever I do have? You may be in jail, or you may be in Siberia. And wasn't it Viktor Frankl that said that your ultimate freedom is the freedom to choose your attitude? And you can determine whether or not you're going to get all eaten up about the fence, or whether you're going to concentrate on the freedom that you do have within those bouts. So it isn't always necessarily that making them bigger or is the problem. There's somewhere they have to be set. And within those limits, then let's concentrate on what we can do. And let's not get preoccupied with what we can't do, since that seems to be a propensity of human nature. So we've suggested on this first page here that you had the paragraphs of the question. There must be limits. We must not only know where to start, but where to stop. And I like that, don't you, over there in Exodus, that when the pillar of fire by night or the cloud by day moved, they moved. And when it stopped, they stopped. And God guided their starts, and he guided their stops. It's safe to say that all authorities are limited, all commitments are limited, and all callings are limited. And there's some evidence of that in 2 Corinthians 10, where Paul talks about, I'll not go beyond the limits. And in my boasting, and those particular limits that God has assigned to me, that reaches even to you, Corinthians. He and Peter had a little understanding that Paul would concentrate on the Gentiles and Peter on the Jews. To exceed one's limits is the natural outcome of the fall. And I think that's theologically, at least to me, true. That Satan said, I will be like the Most High. I will be as God. There is something to put ourselves at the center and be God. I like that story of the pastor who, on Sunday evening after a long day, he had to teach a Sunday school class, preach the morning service, and visit in the afternoon and the evening sermon, and was recounting to his wife that evening of all the spiritual burden that he felt for his congregation, that he felt. And the souls of these people and the family concerns he had for them. And after his wife had listened patiently for quite a little while, he finally stopped. She said, well, dear, I think your job is to represent God, not be God. And that helps a lot. And I told some of you, it really helped me a great deal to resign as manager of the universe and even to resign as a manager of the Lord's harvest field. I decided also that's his, really. You know, I mean, he said so, and decided to leave it with him and simply say, Lord, what do you want me to do? And that's a great help. I also tried to resign as a judge of other people, but I backslide on that a whole lot. I have to keep turning in that resignation all the time. So the question before us, having determined the goal on what's involved on the playing field, what are the sidelines? Some want them narrow, and we talked about that. Some want them broad. Some want us to have a powerful rushing stream like the Colorado River down a chasm or a canyon, and others seemingly like a swamp where we don't know where it starts or stops. Seems to me that limits grow out of three things. Scriptural guidelines that we've tried to talk about. There are providential circumstances, or you might say strategic considerations. I think that I know in my lifetime we've done a lot of idealistic dreaming, and it's okay to dream as long as you engineer it alongside the reality. And if you dream, I think you get farther along than if you hadn't. But somebody called it imagineering. You dream, and then you compromise that with reality and proceed from there. And then there's the inner conviction, there's an inner sense from the Holy Spirit that, we tried this and it didn't work, or we didn't seem to be blessed in it, which is a similar way that you discover your personal gift. Is that not right? You try things, and certain things you have a sense of fulfillment and blessing from God, and other people are helped.
by that, very obviously so,
and you would assume that, well, now there's something that God wants me to do, or maybe that's something I should just leave alone because I don't have a witness there that that's what God wants for me. And so this morning, we're talking about the 60 of us. That's who we're talking about. Here we are, we've come together now, and God has called us to co-labor together. And are there things that we should do that we know clearly? Are there things that we should just avoid doing for any one of these reasons? And so we offered a list here as a beginning list for addition, deletion, modification, etc. The last paragraph on that page I want to call attention to, it depends on where a person is in his thinking as to how he responds to these limits. To many, if not most, of the navigators, they'd say, well, so what's new? You know, that's fine with me. But there are some, maybe they wanted to be out over here, and they say, well, whoa, man, I don't know, that's quite a problem. So it depends on where we are as to whether there's anything new about this or not. Now, the questions for discussion there, should limits be set? If so, on what basis? What should be subtracted, added, or altered on the will-do list, and the same on the will-not-do list? Are things I'd like you to answer in your discussion group later this morning, and come back with recommendations, specific recommendations on these lists to how you feel about it in your discussion group. And should there be any difference in the limits set for the community ministry than for the collegiate or the military? And if you could give that some thought also and come back with some recommendations is what we'd like to have you do in your discussion time. Okay? Any questions at this point? Let's go to the will-do list. Evangelism. This needs always to be the cutting edge. In my history with the navigators, there was a time in there when we were enjoying fellowship with each other a great deal in small Bible study groups. But the cutting edge of outreach, I think, had just in general terms been lost. And then it was that God took Leroy Imes, and we became what we call at that time the coordinator of the U.S. work. And under God, the Lord used him to turn that around and to get evangelism on the cutting edge of the work. And to me, that was a significant period of time in the Navigator history. And that also had its effects not only in the States, but on our work overseas. I didn't check my dates, but it seems to me like that was back in about the 60s. Was that when you were in the coordinator, Leroy, in the 60s? Early, okay. Yeah, it must have been, that's right. So evangelism or evangelizing. Now establishing, and Jack tells me there's some, a number of wonder if that's the right word, but and maybe we'll come up with a different one. But this, in the general area of establishing or follow-up as I would call it, and maybe that's not the right word either for this, what we're trying to say here, but I've simply made the observation that, at least looking back over the 35 years that I've been around the work, just overall, it's safe to say that I think that's been our main emphasis. That's where we have pretty well centered, not solely, but just as a general observation historically. Now, equipping, something else we should do. Someone has suggested a word I like it to... don't know if it says the word, but it starts with E anyway, enabling, maybe a possibility. And that this is necessary to fulfill our aim, to see multiplication and to fulfill the Great Commission. And hope you remember this is any comments, or these were written before any discussion this week. These were not written last night. And I don't mean to say there's something about that statement we'd have changed, but just occurred to me as I go down through here, that these were being written in the context of Well, 2 weeks ago. Now, major on young adults, 18 to 30. This is a strategic consideration. We have limited resources to apply to unlimited needs. Now, the first thing I'd like to do, having said that, is that I do not really have anything against middle-aged people. And being one myself, I like to assume that there is some life left yet in the old bird, and even a little flexibility. In fact, I've seen some people set in concrete at 25, another pretty flexible at 70. In fact, my dad at 83 is quite a zippy, flexible individual. But what I'm trying to say here, that I see this 18 to 30, as like the wake of a boat on a lake, when the first boat out on the lake in the morning, and when it's just like glass. And this boat cuts out across, and there's a wake that goes out from it. And my thought is that the central thrust of that boat, of that wake, of our ministry, is the 18 to 30. Now, I don't mean to imply by that, as we did in the Middle East, to start with high school students was not the way to start there. Nor am I saying that we shouldn't work with anybody who's 55. I really kind of personally hope we do. But rather to try to say that the thrust, because of limited resources and with unlimited needs, this is a strategic consideration that we consider having a focal point in that age group. I know there is some talk that maybe this ought to be 35. But this is the recommendation for your consideration. Next, we relate to local congregations and specialized functions. We use a technical term to both modalities and sodalities. And this is necessary to maintain our calling. And we've seen that more clearly as we've talked about the relating our fruit. And to relate significantly to the body of the Christ because we're supposed to. I mean, the Bible says that we are interdependent. And when we get a little on the subject of basic beliefs, to even carry that farther, and the answer to Dawson Trotman's prayer that the Lord will enable us to give to many others that which he's given us. Now, I know that we can't command loyalties of people, but we can sure can pray that God might make us instruments to provide labors for many. And it's not as though they are ours and we give them away. But it's rather it's prayer and concern and an outward look. So to relate to the local congregation and to specialized functions, other works, as Doss would have called those, I think. To accept as representatives only those so gifted and called. Now this grows out of both scriptural and strategic considerations that I'm wondering if you really train a person into being an AVRAP or whether you find someone who is gifted and called by God who is then trained to be a navigator representative. That's the thought here. And for your discussion and thought, thereby reducing the frustration on those that God may not want to be in this kind of capacity, full-time capacity. And also that, it really makes prayer the chief means of recruiting. And furthermore, if God wants you up the ladder then, and you get there by the number of reps, and then it's going to have to be an answer to prayer. It'll be a test of our prayer life, not a test of how well we're able to form somebody. Just a thought. But this would be an implication, as I see it, of our discussion of earlier on this week. So that's something for you to think about and discuss. And that being the case, you might rewrite the requisites for an area rep. And it, And as somebody asked me what I thought might be an implication of this project, there may be, I don't know, there may be less, but there may be more too in answer to prayer.
Well, would you just repeat the first statement you made after when you introduced that portion right there? You gave two possibilities, and somehow it escaped me.
Would you run that back, please? I forget it.
The second part was gifted and called by God and then trained to be an area rep, and I assume the first part was an antithesis of that, or the vice versa.
Yeah, that's it. Whatever that statement was.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Say that again.
I don't know if I can. Did it sound pretty good?
I don't know.
You don't know.
Sound.
Oh, I see. So did mine, apparently. My tape recorder went blank there. I think what I was saying is that we would, I'll put it another way, that we'd pray that God would point out the gifted and called them, and we'd train them to be reps. And that's the sequence, rather than just trying to train people to be reps who may not be gifted or called. That's not a... I think I said it better before, but I think that's the way it ought to meant. It's an application of Ephesians 4. Are certain people called, gifted by the Holy Spirit? Is there a grace there? Calling from God and the consequent gifts for specialized functions. Are we a specialized function? Well, then, would it not be true then that the people called to it would be gifted and called by God? Hey, well, we do that already, but that would be an implication, as I see it, of what we're talking about here. Yes?
Lauren, how do you understand the calling to be a navigator?
When I think of calling, I think of an inner sense of calling. And I've suggested elsewhere here that there are three bases for one's personal calling. One is this inner sense of calling or feeling that they're called in a certain direction, that inner drive or pull in a certain direction is another way to describe it. Secondly, the appropriate gifts. And thirdly, the recognition of those brothers who are closest to him and would be involved in that he does in fact have those gifts. That there is a corroboration in their observation and in their spirits. That would be the three. That's what I would, that's how I describe that.
Are you going to speak to the matter of gifts? Which gifts? While we're here?
Well, I have some opinions, but we can talk about it together, yeah. I know what I'd like to see every navigator have, but Lord, you'll have to do it if you want. And there's where it blurs out, it goes out of focus sometimes. But yes, that'd be a good discussion. Well, what should they be? And I'd like to know what you all think. And here again, I'd like to remind you once more, and I'm not trying to be humble about this, I'm trying to say that we here are a team together. And there are certain things I don't deal with every day. You do. And that's why my ear is to the ground of how the feedback comes. Does it fit life as you really find it? And if there's a ring of truth to it, you'll say in your heart, yeah, that's right. That fits where I live and where I work. To me, there'd be a corroboration. And if there isn't that corroboration, then I like to wait and see, well, now maybe we're not quite on the right track. So this is the framework again now, and to see how it responds and how it fits where you live and move and have your being. Okay? And that we send and support missionaries. And by that, I don't necessarily mean even full-time, but maybe non-professional as well as professional. But the thought that we believe our calling is worldwide and we have a vision for this world. And Scotty told me, he said, don't forget, Lauren, that some of the hue and cry you hear about missionary go home is being said of the missionaries who may be in trying to help local congregations, fraternal workers, etc. But nobody is asking the missionary to go home who knows how to lead people to Christ and make disciples and get that nucleus that it takes to plant a church. Out there, I talked with Michael Griffiths of the Overseas Missionary Fellowship I said, what is your purpose? Well, one of their aims is to plant churches. And, it was to win people to Christ, disciple them, and then form them into churches, develop churches, and then help those churches grow. And he said, we can get missionaries to do everything except really know how to win people to Christ and make disciples out of them, the very thing that takes to establish a church. There is not a glut of missionaries of that kind. And this is what we're... We mustn't be put off by some of the things that we hear and read and so on the day the missionary is over. Well, not that kind. That's why the day of that kind will never be over. Because Jesus said the laborers or the harvesters are few. Why don't we stop on this page now for questions for clarification. I would rather you discuss, let's be sure we understand what we're talking about, and then you can discuss these later on. And I don't intend to necessarily to defend these. All I intend to do is to put them out there for addition, deletion, modification, as you think them through and pray them over in your meetings. And but let's see if I made myself clear. Terry?
Historically, you say in establishing this has been the NAB's main emphasis in light of the presentation that Jack made on equipping. It would seem like to me that from the way he defined equipping, as that would have been probably our mainstream of emphasis.
I think it.
Defining establishing is just for building up of people and discipling them. Say that would be true. As I listened to Jack describe, that seems like that would be more than historical.
In recent history, yes. Mm-hmm. I think so, in recent history. And this may be a direction in which the Lord is leading us at this time in history. But I mentioned earlier, 35 years, I mentioned that specifically, and for whatever that was worth. Yes, Jack?
On the 18 to 30 age group, mm-hmm. Awake in the boat. Where do we pull the plug on a staff man who is he's pretty close to getting outside the wake?
What was that, Jake?
On his
30th birthday. Where his ministry, say, is...
His ministry is becoming very, very marginal as to meeting that limit. He's digging under the fence.
Well, my thought on that would be just... And I hear again, I'm not defending the, the 30. But I would think that he would have to provide adequate justification for his ministry and show how it does contribute toward the central aim of the navigators. Just as on the other side of the fence, it could be shown that by beginning with high school students, this is the best place in this particular place to do that. Why, that's what I mean by some latitude there. And there may be some 55-year-old people who are real disciple makers. But all I'm saying is that it seems to me that strategically we ought to focus in that which is going to give us the greatest number of laborers to reach the greatest number of people in the time. I got some interest on that subject. I can see that. I have to get some names down here. Bob Lovren first, Chef.
No,
I'll be Ho. Daryl. And Ken. And Jim. And Donald. Would you want to take this while I go? I'd like to go get a cup of coffee while. All right, we'll start with Bob Lovren.
As I view the illustration, to me, the thing would be that the navigator's main thrust as a organization is to establish churches. And individual navigator may, because of the type of ministry he has, that person could be somewhere outside the main thrust of the way. So the way you just illustrated is that every navigator has to be within the weight. When I was thinking possibly there could be some navigators, but organizationally where the main throttle is within the weight.
Now, I didn't say that every navigator had to be within here. I said this is where the thrust of our ministry ought to be. And you can't say, how old are you? Well, I just had my 31st birthday. Well, sorry, buddy, you're out. Also, I'm talking about us this morning. I'm not talking about the guy that you have in a Bible class who may be the vice president of Monsanto Chemical, maybe that's his sphere of ministry. Here we are, 60 of us. Where should we focus the central aim? And that's what I had in mind there. Because part of what we've already preached is to help that guy have his ministry. And then, of course, that creates some other problems. Yes, Walt?
I think if I could understand Bob's question, he's asking whether the word major has to do with individual or corporate.
I see. Thank you. Does it have to do with individual?
Not the people out who are ministering to.
Every staff have to major, or do the majority of staff have to be in there?
My thought is that a staff person whose main thinking and thrust is not in that direction should give account as to why he is working with 60-year-olds as the main thrust of his ministry. It would have to be justified. There have to be it's not a limit in the sense that you have to report the ages of the people you're working to. But what are you thinking? Where's the thrust? And this is a strategic thought having to do with the need to maximize the number of laborers in the world with the maximum time to labor. On this subject, right now we're discussing Lovren's question, then I'll get back to Ho. Ho, is this a different one, or are you on Lovren's?
I'm not on Lovren's, but I'm in the eighth group thing.
Okay, all right. I think we've got some people speaking to Lovren. All right, Stevens?
Wouldn't there be other forms besides the navigators that person might be better off in? He might get more support for what he's doing, and he might fit in better to a form that's ministering to that thing outside our guidelines.
Yes, I wonder, for instance, if Young Life specialize in this, and we ought to recognize that maybe they do know something about it, and why duplicate what they're doing? One reason for not having high school camps here at Glen Eyrie. So why duplicate? There's a specialty. And we can talk about this quite a while. I got some other thoughts on it too. But speaking to Lovren, who else had a word to speak to Lovren? All right, then Ray Ho, you're next.
Within that age group thing, 18 to 30, I wonder if there's a need to be more definitive to... While we're in a college campus, we're locked in. There's no need to define what we're working with a certain educational level. But within 18 to 30, there's quite a spectrum of both educational and social economic opportunities. And we can go anywhere within 18 to 30, but historically we have worked with a certain, whether it's middle class or a certain educational level that's adaptable to our ministry. And I wonder if we need some definition in there.
Now, just to me, that's a strategic consideration. The reason we work with GI servicemen to start with, DAW start with junior high boys, really. And they grew up and got to be high school boys, so he had high school work. But then he liked the idea of servicemen because of the age, because of their grouping, and that seemed for him, with his limited resources, the best pool of manpower to work in. And we branched out to collegiates, and that society bunched them up for us again, and we know how to do something about that. So it seems to me that some of that's tactical. And I don't know as we necessarily need to say, well, we will confine our ministry to collegiates and servicemen, particularly overseas, where the servicemen thing's out, and then your collegiates are 1/2 of 1% of the population. And that's okay if that's all the resources you have, you can put them there. But then when you get more resources than necessary for that one half of 1%, then you could branch out wherever you can tactically reach them the best, it seems to me. That's just a thought. Now, it may be that some of you will feel that we ought to be a little more careful, I mean, specify it more closely. I don't want to develop the limits into a strategy, necessarily. I think strategy is something else that's constantly evolving, and rather keep what we will do and will not do as brief as possible rather than as long as possible. That's one thing. I'd sure like not to put out a policy manual that says, this is what we will do and will not do. I'd rather have understandings. So that's just a thought in response to that. But it may be that we should. I'm not saying we shouldn't. Daryl?
Part of my answer to Bob's question, another thought I would like you to share on is why the age 30, in terms of your thoughts, why you chose that. One of the thoughts being that in terms of the community ministry, particularly the collegiate military work will go up in most of the age up to 25. That is the same. We have 18, so you're left with about probably 4 or 5 years in terms of reaching the community people in that age. In terms of what, what caused you to make the decision on 30 or the idea?
I would say that what caused me to do is do that's probably antiquated, but I would like to, and I put it there to see what you guys would come up with. Can we do what needs to be done by the time they're 30? If experience is showing, say nope, Sandy. That's got to be made 35. Well, okay. But it seems to me like... Well, let me put on... You were talking about getting nervous. I get nervous when we start ministering to the whole family. For several reasons. I think that there are certain things that would seem very legitimate in themselves that are going to move us toward being a modality, the local congregation. And that wherever we possibly can hedge ourselves in for that not to happen, for strategic reasons as well as some guidelines that we've talked about earlier, I'd like to see us avoid that. Even though you could, and so when you get on the will not, some of these things I think are scripture legitimate for us to do. I really do. I, for instance, myself think that we can serve communion among ourselves. That that's not restricted to local congregations. But if we don't need to and they feel that's theirs, well, then why do it? And it seemed to me that we need to, wherever we can find ourselves the legitimate heads, let's do it in order to not become the swamp. And that's one reason I'd like to see it in there. And not that we would not help some people, we'd have to be justified. We'd have to, we'd say, well, whoops, now let me see. Why is that? Because I wouldn't want to set a, you know, as I say, start turning in the ages of, on our reports, and they don't count it as an age. Yes, Jack?
Well, some of these guys are going to be faced with decisions in this area, and that's why I raised the issue. It's kind of like Abraham, Sodom, and Gomorrah. He kept pleading with the Lord, well, for lack of 5, Lord, will you do it? Well, you know, you get a guy out there hacking away in a navigator ministry, and it's his primary thrust is with the 30 to 35 age group, and then you pretty soon it becomes the 40 to 45 age group, and it was kind of, well, standing for lack of 5, will you? And
see, and this ties in, doesn't it, Jack, with the halfway house. If they stay in a halfway house forever, they will become, if you go start ministering to all their needs of marriage, children, deaths, and all the rest, then that has become, for all practical purposes, a local congregation. And we're going to have to force ourselves some way, somehow, put the pressure on ourselves to stop. And I don't think, on the other hand, that I can identify a clear cutoff. But we've got to have it in our hearts. This is what we're aiming for. I better get back to see Ken. You're next, and let me see. Then Chuck, and I saw another Bob Bird. Okay, Ken.
Well, this is interpreted, Lauren, but what I'm getting is that you are de-emphasizing the community ministry. Because it's rare that you meet someone under 25 in the community ministry, so that
gives you about a 5-year limit. And I just need to know, I think that we went into the community ministry not by plan or call, but we just did it. And they have been a lot of experiments and a lot of different things. And now we are defining things more clearly. And if we should not be in there, I would like to know. Or if we should minimize that, I would like to know that too. Because I'm confused as to what, you know, I'm still kind of in limbo regarding the community ministry.
My straightforward opinion on that is that we do not want to eliminate it, but we want to corral it. And some of the things I hear by some people in it scare me. And it needs to be corralled. And I could give you illustrations on that, but not eliminated. But now we've had an experience factor. We have let things go for a while in order to learn, and we've allowed various experiments to go on. And it seems like now is the time for us to stop, evaluate, see where we are, and we can corral it without saying that we don't want to do it. Now, let's see. Jim Morris.
From the community perspective, Warren, from my own experience, I think what Ken said there is very valid, that the 20 to 30 age bracket in the community, it's very difficult to develop a really effective community ministry with that narrow, a major thrust. Most of the fellows that come into the community out of college, they're struggling with getting themselves established professionally between 20 and 30. And until they reach the point where they're willing to allow the Lord to exercise some control in their lives, they're not really available to them. And it's usually between 25 and 35 that they reach that point. And the effect and the influence of a man in the community between 20 and 30 is relatively small. He has little influence. And if the Lord gives us men in their 30s who are developing, they're willing to let the Lord control their lives, and they're developing considerable influence and penetration in the community, they have a much greater impact in their ministry in the community. And in my mind, that narrow major thrust would not result in a penetrating, effective community ministry.
Okay. Donald McGilchrist?
I suspect, Ron, that non-profit organizations have a general tendency to have superb aims and fuzzy goals. And I fear that this is our condition. And in this context, I'd like to suggest that instead of having limits of what we do on the positive side, we should pull these or adapt these into some objectives. That's part of the strategy, because I heard you speak to this just now, that the idea of positive limits is a little confusing to me. Because really what the men and you are expressing are positive trusts rather than limits. And these could be expressed as objectives.
Okay.
Another factor that comes to mind is the way we have worked is the people that the Lord gives a man, we hold him responsible for, and he doesn't... not many times he'll give them to people in that bracket, but many times he doesn't. And this is something that we have to justify if we tell a fellow that, he's too old for you to work with, you're far enough to someone. It's a tough thing to do.
I got your name. No more hands now. I've got all we can take for this time. I've got 6 more to go. Harvey, you're the last one. I would like to finish the other list by coffee break so that you could go directly to your discussion groups. And because what we're doing is arguing with the idea. I'm setting it forth for clarification. And you can argue with it all you want, change it, delete it. And it's okay. I would like to... I see where we struck some fire. And But I would like to finish the whole business so you can go and have at it. That'll be a lot of fun. Then come back and tell us what they really ought to be. So I have Chuck Bowler next. I'd like to suggest... Oh, excuse me, I thought you were through.
The transition that we keep talking about, collegiate or military work into a community environment, doesn't take 6 months. It usually takes a series of years, because there's babies, and there's jobs, and there's marriages, and there's that sort of thing. And for a man to become productive, it's pretty hard for him to become productive, at least in my experience, in that period of time. And when he gets established in his job frame, where he is high enough in his particular profession in order to take time and to be free enough to be involved in the disciple ministry, he's into his 30s.
And one comment, I'd like to suggest the possibility of not using the word community, because I think it can be, it gets us, we're worried about watering down, getting too broad. To me, if we say that, well, the community is made up of all these people in Colorado Springs, and then now let me see, how am I going to reach this community? Now, let's see, there's the students, and then over here's the military, and then here's the media people, here are the white collar, there's the blue collar, there's the hard hats. Now let's see, it really turns me on to reach this whole community. So then I have a few people over here, and I start to strategize. Now let me see, I need somebody to sign him here and somebody here. And the guy didn't know anything about blue collar, white collar, hard hats, or whatever. It's an artificial approach to trying to reach it. And we, rather than starting where he is and following the lines of his contact, that's one thing. Another thing, when the guy says, it really turns me on with the idea to reach this whole community for Christ, I'm not sure that's a navigator objective, any more than it's a navigator objective primarily to reach a whole campus for Christ. Our objective has to do with laborers, or a certain kind of people, and we have pools of manpower in which to reach them. And it may be that the word community in the minds of some has gotten us a little off the track. A question here is, should the same guidelines relate to the community ministry, as it's called, as the collegiate and military? And that's what I want you to, talk about. But I'm just suggesting the possibility that in some minds, what we mean by community may be a little bit too broad just by the use of the term. Maybe layman's ministry you ought to go back to. There are the non-collegiate, non-military navigator ministry. Bob Yohan.
I want to think about what Jim was talking about and Chuck Bowler, but a little more specifically from the perspective or the standpoint of recruiting laborers. It seems to me, and looking back over the years, in my own personal experience, and also in observing a number of other laymen, that one of the things that happens is the guy goes into a business or profession, and he makes his adjustment from college into the world, getting married, and getting a family. And then, after he's in this thing for a number of years, his whole value system begins to change. God begins to show him that world wasn't really what he thought it was. And so that a man begins to really question whether he's given his life to the right thing. And it seems to me that to recruit that type of man, it takes more than 30 years. It's probably somewhere between 30, well, I would say at least 35, maybe not even 40.
Okay.
So again, that's just a small segment of the total picture, but it is a factor.
Okay, Bob Bird.
Warren, I personally feel very comfortable with that illustration, because what it says to me is that you're saying the main thrust of our staff, whose age level is probably, perhaps 25 to 30, maybe 33, somewhere like that. And as I look back on Florida, I see 30 years and under on the staff, and I ask myself, How are those staff people going to have effective ministry up in an age group where there are children that are grown up and going to college, there are children in high school, There are marriage problems that, you know, they're still maybe not even encountering themselves. How are they going to have an effective thrust in that age level? And I appreciate the freedom there, because if you do have that person who can minister effectively in that other strata, turn him loose. And as long as he can justify it, let him go.
Okay, Jerry White. We did get to you, finally. No, Har Boslin, you get your speech, and then we're through for now from that.
Just a comment that, Warren, that when we're talking about evangelism, establishing and equipping, the 18 to 30, I think, is a sure focus for our evangelism. Because in light of labor, if you evangelize at a higher age, they do not become very available. But when we're talking about establishing and equipping, it seems like that's when we need to go over into perhaps 35.
Okay. Har Boslin?
From our own experience, it doesn't seem like the breadth of our outreach is a problem. It's the time that you allow for the different age groups as to your priority of your time and how you control that. So, for instance, I have one Bible study with a bunch of managers from Western Union, a couple of vice presidents and so on. And yet, my priority time on that is less than 1% of my time. Now, I'm experimenting. It's not my main thrust. And I don't expect to produce any navigator staff or probably even leadership out of it. I'm finding out what's out in the business world. I think there has to be that allowance for men to experiment, but not to the cost of our main thrust. I think what we need to ask as we're ministering to these different age groups is, what's our objective for working with this age group and given the amount of time that we do to it? How will our vision and primary goal be accomplished by working with those groups? I think asking some of those questions will help determine the priority time that we give to that age group. So I think as I give our ministries, although we minister some to the different age groups, our main thrust, as far as I can see it down the line, will be 18 to 30, with no problem. So the breadth, say, of the older group, we could incorporate hundreds into that, as long as we don't try to minister to them on a personal basis or on a necessarily a regular basis. But we minister to them occasionally or however.
Well, thank you. It's now about 4 minutes to 10. I take it that there is some interest in the subject of the 18 to 30 guideline. I do not have time to, and I just don't want to read this other list without having some explanation and time to talk about them. We've got 4 minutes. Does anybody want to talk about any of these other items on here other than the one we've now talked about in these last 4 minutes? Yes, Roy?
I just want to make a comment that I don't know how many people were listening when, I know everybody was listening, but how many felt the importance of what you said about missionaries. But I just like to underscore and say here, and play a little band, that from what my observations is that everywhere, if anybody can deliver the goods in evangelism, or equipping the saints, he is very, very welcome around the world.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. Yes, Jerry.
I think we ought to exempt this next to last one, except as representatives only, etc. That that is going to be very, very crucial for our staff selection. crucial ones that will do if we really define what we mean by that.
Yes, Walt.
On your last limit, send and support missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
Is the intent of that navigator missionaries or missionaries of other works, or both?
The primary intent on that was navigators, but not to exclude the other. But when I wrote it, that's what I was thinking of. But not to exclude the other.
Does that mean then that we're preparing to support non-navigator missionaries?
No, that's one part of it. I was thinking of supporting navigator missionaries, which seems like we're having a hard enough time to do now. I thought about this, you know, supporting people who go to other, maybe for a while with other works, and I don't know if the system will stand it or not, but it does not mean that we couldn't have people who are equipped by the navigators and help define and help to get their support elsewhere to go out with some other mission. In fact, I hope so. In fact, I hope many times so. But I'm not trying to speak to whether we could finance them or not. That's a whole other subject that you're the guys that bear the brunt on that. Okay, we'll have a break for coffee.